Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
Yes, I am William Clear, and welcome to the first inaugural episode of Pop Talk and Aliens. This podcast will focus on a wide variety of topics, everything from music to pop culture, sports, a lot of Star Wars talk, and even sometimes we'll talk about aliens, the Roswell kind of aliens, if you know what I mean. Yes, you do. But this first episode, I will be without a guest, and I will talk about one subject, and one subject only, and that is the music of Sir Elton John, which is something that I know way too much about, so I'm going to blab out my knowledge to you by rating his studio albums from worst to first. Now, there are 31 total Elton John studio albums. I am not going to count compilations, greatest hits, live albums, The Lion King, shit like that. Oh, and there will be some offensive language, but I will use it in the most non-threatening way possible, so just fucking relax. Now, if you don't know anything about Elton John or you hate Elton John, you aren't going to enjoy this. But if you're a casual fan, or especially if you are a nerd fan like I am, you might enjoy these thoughts, so let's get right into them. 31 studio albums. Well, I should mention before that, there is a 32nd studio album coming, February 5th. It's called Wonderful Crazy Night. Not too crazy about that title. And the cover artwork that's been released is possibly the worst cover art in the history of Elton John albums. And the first single is not too encouraging. But haven't heard the rest of it, so I'm not going to pencil it into the bottom of this list just yet. We'll leave it out, and we'll start with the bona fide worst Elton John album of all time, which is Leather Jackets, 1986. Now, you'll get a lot of arguments from many an Elton John fan that will tell you that 1979's Victim of Love was, in fact, his worst effort. It's impossible to argue that, really. I mean, you can make that argument. But I put Leather Jackets at the bottom of the well for a couple of reasons. First of all, Leather Jackets is produced by Gus Dudgeon, who produced every great 70s Elton John album. So right there, the standard is higher, and if you add to that the fact that Davy Johnstone was on board, Toppin was penning lyrics, there is no fucking excuse for Leather Jackets to be as bad as it was. Victim of Love, on the other hand, was produced by a disco guy. It didn't have any Elton John original material on it. It was just like a throwaway. Leather Jackets was supposed to be a fucking real album, and it's horrible. So there's no excuse. I mean, the album sounds like a swimming pool of synthesizers with a few mediocre Elton John songs thrown in to sink to the bottom. And as a matter of fact, the liner notes of this album specifically cite the synthesizers they used in recording. Name by name, they tell you what model of synths they are. I don't have the liner notes in front of me, thank God, because I don't want to know what 80s shit they were using, and I don't want to remember. So that's there, and then there's the material. There's a couple of songs that could have been decent. Hoop of Fire, Paris, Slow Rivers. They had potential, but when you bathe and marinate them in the synth atrocities that Chris Thomas, the producer, put all over the place, you completely lose sight of anything that might have been good to begin with. There was a top 40 hit. It was called Heartache All Over the World, which really just goes to show that DJs in 1986 were as coked up as Elton was when he recorded this thing. And by the way, it contains a song written by Cher. So there you go, Leather Jackets. That is your number 31 worst, my friends. Putting, of course, Victim of Love at number 30. Now, as I mentioned, it was produced by a disco guy named Pete Ballot. The songs were written by a bunch of disco guys, and Elton does not play a goddamn note on this thing. He just sings his way through a processor of chorus vocals and gets the fuck out of the studio. To sum up Victim of Love, there's an 8-minute version of Johnny Be Good that leads off that album, disco style. An 8-minute version of Johnny Be Good that leads off the album, disco style. To put that into perspective, the Grateful Dead, who are no strangers to taking a 4-minute song for a 15-minute spin around the block, they did their Johnny Be Good in under 4 minutes. The Grateful Dead recorded Johnny Be Good respectfully in under 4 minutes. Elton John disrespecting the song and disrespecting you, the customer, with an 8-minute version to lead off the album. That's Victim of Love. So we go to number 29, which is 1997's The Big Picture. There are two good songs on this album, and they are sterilized to unlistenability. The lead-off track, Long Way From Happiness, and track 2, Live Like Horses. Beautiful songs when heard live on a piano with just Elton John singing, but when put in the fucking Chris Thomas electric chair, skippable, sweet tarts fade from memory before the songs are over. Elton and Bernie themselves have cited this as one of their worst albums, so I'm happy to say that I'm not alone, and perspective has brought the truth to all. So that brings us to 1985. Number 28 on the list is Ice on Fire. This album was produced again by Gus Dudgeon, preceding Leather Jackets, and again marinated in a cool, calculated synthesizer bathtub. Even the recording of Elton John's piano on this album leaves me with a cartoon bubble with a question mark over my head. It sounds like a synthesizer itself, even though it is, in fact, a Steinway Grand. But the synthesizer orchestra of this album renders it almost unlistenable, save for the one gem, which is Nikita. Somehow, that song comes out of this album smelling like a rose. I love Nikita, and I think it is a perfect pop song. But there's a couple other things that have to be noted, couple more warts on Ice on Fire. One being Act of War, a duet with Millie Jackson, which has this hard-edged, like, machine gun drum machine where they yell at each other and in turn yell at you until the song is finally over. And then we have the duet with George Michael called Wrap Her Up, where EJ and Georgie trade off naming chicks that they think are hot. And the irony of that is, well, it can't be ignored. So let's move on from Ice on Fire and get to number 27, which is 1993's Duets. Almost didn't qualify for this list, but it is officially a studio album. There's new Elton John material. It's not live. It's not a compilation, and so on and so forth. Also, some of it's not bad. Leonard Cohen and Elton sing Ray Charles' Born to Lose in a contrasting style and a Nelson Riddle-esque string and sax arrangement. The real gem of the album, though, is a song with Tammy Wynette called A Woman's Needs. It's an original Toppin and Elton John composition. Great country lyrics. Could have been a hit on country radio, I think. But a couple of the travesties. The main one being the reimagining of Don't Go Breaking My Heart as a electronic dance song with RuPaul. And then we have duets with PM Dawn and Marcella Detroit. You remember those people? You fucking better not. Duets, number 27. Number 26, let's jump down to Jump Up. 1982's Jump Up, produced by Chris Thomas, featuring this was the beginning, actually, of a three-year, three-album string of Elton playing primarily just with his original band of Dee Murray, Nigel Olsen, and Davy Johnstone. Now, this album is not much different than the rest of the 80s stuff that Elton John put out. Pretty lightweight, a lot of pop, but it does have a sort of live band-type energy going for it and makes it somewhat decent. It also has Empty Garden, which is Elton John and Bernie Taupin's heartbreaking tribute to John Lennon, beautiful melody, and lyrically, to use an overused word, poetry. Also has a very underrated track to close the album called All Quiet on the Western Front, which ends with a Nigel Olsen drum extravaganza, and you can't go wrong with that. However, it does have the dubious honor of containing the single worst Elton John and Bernie Taupin song ever written. That song being I Am Your Robot, indisputably the all-time worst. This song, the premise of this song is that the protagonist is so in love that he has become now nothing more than a robot for his would-be lover. And it crushes the brain with these would-be robot synthesizer sounds and Elton screeching the most nail-scratching falsetto vocal in his history, and, I shit you not, in the lyrics, he lists his robot serial number in the song. I quote, "I am your robot, and I'm programmed to love you. My serial number is 44357. Now, as bad as that is, it doesn't even fucking rhyme. Jesus, all you have to do is replace the 7 with a 2, and you have a rhyme. Then you have, I am programmed to love you. My serial number is 44352. But the song is so insulting that they wouldn't even go that far. There's nothing else to say. Jump Up, halfway decent album, and its serial number is number 26. Number 25, A Single Man. This is a tough album to get along with. It's late 70s, definitely in the thick of the lost years of Elton John and Bernie Taupin not writing together. You'll find no Gus Dudgeon, no original band, save for Davey on one track, I think. It's uneven. It's a disjointed piece of work. It was produced by Elton himself and his longtime sound man, Clive Franks. There are a couple highlights, the lead-off ballad Shine On Through, and also the Gary Osborne-lyriced Georgia. That's probably the highlight of the album. Going in, you think it's going to be a Ray Charles ripoff, but it actually gets into a very authentic Deep South song with a nice choir, and it sounds like the kind of thing that you would want to hear from Elton John, amongst a lot of other sort of experimental type things, like the frantic song Madness and the atonal hypnotic instrumental Song for Guy that closes the album, which, by the way, fucking Europeans loved Song for Guy. Weird. It's number one over there for a long time. He still plays it live when he goes over there sometimes. Stateside, nobody remembers, and only us hardcores even care. So, A Single Man comes in at number 25. Number 24 is 21 at 33. Just to not confuse you with the numbers, the number on the list of the album is number 24. The name of the album is 21 at 33. The reason for that was that Elton was claiming to have had 21 albums released by the age of 33, which was actually total bullshit because he was counting double albums, live albums, and anything else he could think of. Had nowhere near 21 albums at 33. But whatever. Other than the fact that a few songs have Dee Murray and Nigel Olsen back in the fold, there's not a lot to be said about this album other than it's very well suited to being a 1980 album. It's got some Eagles doing backup singing on a take-it-easy sounding song about cocaine called White Lady, White Powder. And there's some songs that sound like the Chips theme. The old TV show, Chips Highway Patrol. It's got a lot of that going for it, particularly on a song called Chasing the Crown. And there is actually a beautiful ballad tucked far away into this album called Sartorial Eloquence, penned by Tom Robinson and Elton John. And the album caps off with a Bernie Taupin lyric called Two Rooms at the End of the World, which is about how Bernie and Elton will always be together, writing in their separate rooms like the captain and the kid, from the end of the world to your 1980s record player. Number 23 is Empty Sky. Now, as an album itself without context, Empty Sky does not have a lot to offer. It was Elton's first ever album. It was released in 69 in England, not in the USA until 1975, when the American record companies knew that anything with Elton John's name on it was an instant seller. Classic 60s, overuse of stereo panning, vocals in one ear, instruments in the other, shit like that. It's right with the times. And it's beautiful in its naivete, but it also sucks in its naivete as well. But the title track does rock pretty well, and Elton's flagrant attempt to sound like Leonard Cohen on Valhalla is always worth a listen. But most of all, it has Skyline Pigeon, the first great song from Bernie and Elton. And although it's recorded very oddly with harpsichords and shit like that on the album, you can tell that something special was about to happen. So Empty Sky, congratulations, you hit number 23. At number 22, going worst to first, remember, Red Strikes Back. 1988, an interesting time for Elton John. He just came off throat surgery that robbed him of most of his falsetto. He was ending a sham marriage to a woman, and still in the midst of his addiction to drugs and alcohol. Also, he had worn out his welcome with the outrageous costumes, so the whole theme of this album was, I'm going back to basics, I'm using my original name, Reg Dwight. The costumes are gone, and, you know, let's get down to it. However, Chris Thomas is producing it, and it's still one of those 80s albums. To me, it's better than some of the shit from the 80s. It's got sort of a Hollywood, California, Santa Monica, Sunset Boulevard feel to it. Bernie Taupin was living the high life in LA in those days, so a lot of the songs are reflective of that. And it's got some great Davy Johnstone acoustic guitar, particularly the solo on the song A Word in Spanish, which is, to my mind, one of the best acoustic guitar solos in a pop song that exists. It also has the Beach Boys singing backups on a few of the songs, most notably the album's closer, Since God Invented Girls, which is a lyrical tribute to Brian Wilson, and the Beach Boys sing it in the background. They sing it well. It's a good capper to the album, and overall, you know, it's not bad. It's on the upper tier of 80s efforts from Elton John, but, you know, again, what are we comparing it to? Leather Jackets, Ice on Fire? You don't need to do too much to beat those two guys. All right. Number 21, Peachtree Road. Peachtree Road came out in 2004, and it was the follow-up to the Rebirth album that was Songs from the West Coast in 2001. Now, it tries to follow that album's lead by being organic and, you know, band-oriented. It dips itself in a Southern flavor with Baptist choirs and a lot of this whole sort of deep Southern soul-type sound, but really it misses the mark. And the songs aren't bad, but the odds are that you're not going to be compelled to go back and listen repeatedly to Peachtree Road. The standout song on this album, to me, is called It's Getting Dark in Here. It's a haunting ballad, and it has a sly reference to Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. But in this song, the sun has gone down. It's a semi-tragic follow-up, and it's a fucking good one. So Peachtree Road, big points for trying, few points for execution. Oh, and Elton produced this album himself, which is probably the first mistake because, as we know, self-censorship, not one of his strong suits. Number 20, we go back to 1981 for The Fox. Now, this was a hard album to find for a long time in America before iTunes, etc. And I never understood that because it's not bad. As a matter of fact, the title track, classic EJ, a lot of his original band playing on it, then the piano-only ballad called Elton's Song, which was written by Tom Robinson lyrically, is gorgeous. It's one of the most heartbreaking Elton John songs of unrequited love that he has. And the album features Carla Etude, which is a orchestral instrumental performed by the London Symphony Orchestra along with Elton that could have been part of a fucking soundtrack to any movie that it wanted to be. There's no shitty songs on The Fox. It's mediocrity a lot of the times, but it's one of those albums that I think is wrongfully cremated by Elton fans and definitely worth another listen. Number 19 is The One from 1992. Red Strikes Back had tried to be Elton John's comeback, but The One was actually the comeback. He was fresh out of rehab, new wig, healthy look and voice, and turned in one of his best pop songs ever, which is the title track. Again, we've got Chris Thomas producing, but on this track, his penchant for aromatic and atmospheric synths actually serves the song. And the same is true for The Closer, which is called The Last Song. Top-notch lyric by Bernie about father at his son's bedside while he dies from AIDS. It's depressing and gorgeous, and well, for the rest of the album, there's a lot of missed marks. The opening track, Simple Life, is a good song, but the drum machine and fake harmonica. How does a fake harmonica get into an album? Who can't play at least a little bit of a harmonica? How is that discussed? I don't know. There's a lot of faked instruments on this album, and most notably the drums, and it brings the thing way down. There's some high moments. David Gilmour and Eric Clapton make guest contributions. And there's some really cool piano solos on this thing, but as far as comebacks go, it's the title track that carries that album. So for number 18, let's go to the year of my birth in 1974, where at the height of his powers, Elton John snuck in the album Caribou, which, although its hits are remembered to this day, its deep cuts are sickeningly underlooked. The album was named for the ranch where it was recorded at, and it brings some heavy-ass hitters to the plate. Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, The Bitch Is Back. But it does sneak in a couple of beautiful, underrated songs, first of which being Pinky, second of which being Dixie Lily, and most of all, and possibly one of the most underrated Elton John tracks ever, Ticking. A piano-only, six-verse, three-different-choruses epic about a young man who shoots up a bar while taking hostages and ultimately gets gunned down by the cops. Fucking decades ahead of its time and haunting to the bone, not being dramatic. Ticking, one of the most disturbing and tragically beautiful songs you'll ever hear by anybody. Number 17, The Captain and the Kid. This is a 2006 follow-up to the Captain Fantastic album, and it was dead before it was even born. Because, much like a Star Wars prequel, you can't win when you go back to face up with a masterpiece. Now, ironically, one of the last lyrics on this album is, quote, "You can't go back, and if you try, it fails." So, as far as a follow-up, the album had no choice but to fail, and it's almost like that lyric knows it. However, context, if you take the sequel element out of that album, it's a pretty fucking good piece of work. It's unflappably consistent. Title track is a countryish stomp down a dirt road. Blues Never Fade Away is a highlight. It's a tribute to all the friends that Bernie and Elton lost over the years. And vocally, it is Elton John getting old and embracing it. His voice cracks. He's almost crying during the bridge. And it sits with you for a long time after it's over, if you have a heart. Dark, it's final. And as far as the rest of the album, there's exceptional musicianship with his live band, Nigel, Davey, etc. And there's some tumbleweedy and honky chateau elements to be found, but without sounding like he's just digging for that old gold. This album was produced by Elton John and Matt Still, who had recently produced some Bruce Hornsby stuff. And I think it's a good fucking album. The only song that falls flat to me is The Bridge, a mostly piano and vocal-only ballad that tries to be the centerpiece of the album, but literally just becomes a bridge to the next track. Number 16, Breaking Hearts. In 1984, Elton John released Breaking Hearts, which I consider to be his most misunderstood album. Not a great album, but misunderstood. Again, Chris Thomas is on board, as is the original band, and it's 80s through and through. There's no doubt. There's no getting around that. But the songwriting, by and large, is above par, especially for that time period for those guys. And the vocals are superb. Toppin turns in some kick-ass words, and sad songs say so much, just forget about it, okay? Just put that song out of your mind. Just fucking never mind that song right now. There are diamonds all over this rough. First off, the title track, Breaking Hearts. This song could not be more underrated. Piano only, reminiscence of ruining past romances, gold. Burning Buildings is a ballad that should have been a single, probably would have been a hit. In Neon's a great song, but unfortunately, again, there's a lot of effects on this album. The guitars are going through 6-7 of fucking effects loops, and so you get common 80s shit unless you're really listening, and then you can really dig out how good some of these fucking songs are. Even the Rocking Restless that opens the album is an actual true rock song. It's not a wannabe. And I'm telling you, the album is worth re-examination in the cold light of the 20th century, because Breaking Hearts ain't what it used to be. Number 15, Too Low for Zero, referred to some people incorrectly as Less Than Zero. That's actually a Robert Downey Jr. movie and contains no songs from the album Too Low for Zero, so get it straight. Too Low for Zero is 1983's predecessor to Breaking Hearts, and it has a similar vibe, same band, Chris Thomas flicking the fucking switches on the Alesis boxes. But this album gets overlooked for one reason, in my opinion, and that's overexposure. I'm Still Standing, and I guess that's why they call it the blues, come from this album, and they were played about 16 million times each for 3 years. And as a result, the album itself became nothing but a shithouse that housed those two songs, in most people's opinion. But it isn't. Because first of all, those are actually great songs. Maybe not after 16 million listens, but they are. And when you throw in songs like Coldest Christmas, Saint, which actually utilizes synthesizers beautifully, The Bouncy Crystal, and the gem of gems, the closer, One More Arrow, you have yourself a great fucking album, my friend. Even Kiss the Bride, pretty generic. But I'm telling you, if that was a Billy Joel song on Glass Houses, you'd be saying it was great. But back to One More Arrow quickly. That song is great. It's genius. Elton John singing in a soft falsetto, breaking into regular head voice when the melody calls for it, and part of his most undersung and over-abused albums ever. Too Low for Zero. Number 14, Rock of the Westies. Now, I've gone back and forth on this one for years. It's a difficult album to get your head around. The follow-up to Captain Fantastic and the first with EJ's post-Nigel and Dee band. Roger Pope plays drums and in a way more rocky and frantic way than Nigel. Kenny Passarelli's on bass, more straightforward than Dee. Caleb Quay, Elton John's musical pal from the 60s, is a far more rock guitarist than Davy Johnstone was, although Davy Johnstone is actually on the album as well because he never gets fired. So it's a two-guitar assault, and there's a lot of guitar on the album. Definitely a rock record, no doubt. But the songs, Dan Dare, Pilot of the Future, Billy Bones and the White Bird, they rock, yes. Are they good songs? I think so. The true rock kicks in at Island Girl, which jumps right into Grow Some Funk of Your Own, which to me is a fucking great rock song, and it's right up there with Saturday Night's Alright for Fighting. Not much in the way of ballads on Rock of the Westies, except for I Feel Like a Bullet in the Gun of Robert Ford, where Bernie dramatically compares himself to the assassin of Jesse James because he dumped a girl. It's a definite highlight. And I thought about putting this album lower, but I'm hedging my bet because I'm pretty sure Rock of the Westies is actually a good album and underappreciated, even by me. So here it is at 14. Number 13 is Made in England. Now, this was what would have been a major milestone in Elton John's career had he not followed it up with the big fucking picture. Released in 1995, Made in England brought K.D. Lang producer Greg Penny into the mix, and he wanted to do one thing, and that was make an actual Elton John record. Originally, the album was going to be called Believe, and every song was going to have a one-word title, but it was then settled to be called Made in England, with all the songs having a one-word title, except Made in England. I prefer the former idea. But anyway, prior to this album, EJ was coming off The Lion King and duets, so shit needed to be stirred. A little more credibility had to be introduced into the mix again. And it was. Made in England is vastly underrated. It brings Paul Buckmaster back with string arrangements after God knows how long, and he fucking runs wild. George Martin himself even arranges one of the songs called Latitude, which the song itself owes a debt of gratitude to You've Gotta Hide Your Love Away. There's a lot of Beatles on this record. The opening chord to the title track is actually an exact replica of the opening chord to Hard Day's Night. But there are a couple of wasted moments. The song Lies is paint by numbers. But the orchestral spread of the song Belfast, the urgency of Believe, the Terrapin Station-like Paul Buckmaster strings on Cold, the song Man, Bernie gets macho in these lyrics, and Elton is somehow able to pull it off with zero irony. And the album caps off with the ethereal, if you don't mind me using that word, Blessed, featuring Ray Cooper's congas, hell of a lot of acoustic guitar from Davey, and a beautifully touching ending to a great underlooked album, Made in England. Number 12, The Union. 2010, Elton John was on vacation listening to his iPod, and along came a Leon Russell song. Now, according to Elton, he became overwhelmed by nostalgia and cried. Leon had inspired his music in the early days more than anyone, and you can hear that influence all over Tumbleweed and Honky Chateau. Elton even toured with him in 1970, but apparently hadn't talked to him since, so after the iPod episode, he called up Leon, said let's do an album together, convinced T-Bone Burnett to produce it, and it sounds like a great idea on paper, and it was. Yes, Union, fantastic return to the early, and I mean early, days of Elton, with Leon providing a perfect counterbalance with his softer, gruffier voice and his dead-on, powerful piano playing. Even though when you watch Leon Russell play a piano, it looks like he's barely touching the fucking thing, but he's got power. It's entertaining and sort of mind-boggling to me, being a below-average piano player. Anyway, songs like Hey Ahab, Monkey Suit, Hearts Have Turned to Stone, Relentless Roots Rock, While Jimmy Rogers Dream, and When Love Is Dying, which features Brian Wilson on backups, ladies and gentlemen, provide the ballad contrast that stays away from syrup, just keeps the album on an even keel. Elton sings probably 65-35 to Russell on this album, but it doesn't really matter because it's not a duets album. It doesn't come across as one. It's a collaboration, with T-Bone Burnett providing his own session musicians for the whole album to get the kind of group play sound that he wanted. And to cap it off, this album has Gone to Shiloh, a Civil War ballad featuring a verse sung by Neil Young, Leon, and Elton, and is one of the best goddamn things Elton Burnie have ever written. Number 11 is Sleeping with the Past. Now, I might be sentimental, and I might be overrating this album, because it was the first time I bought an Elton John album the day it came out. But honest to God, after all of these years, I still don't know of a bad song on this album. Sacrifice alone is worth the price of admission, and if you're still not satisfied, Blue Avenue. If that's not good enough, here's Healing Hands, one of the most legitimate gospel pop songs Elton's ever recorded. Even fucking Club at the End of the Street is bursting with hooks and a hell of a sax solo. The band on this one is Elton's short turn at an R&B style band, with Jonathan Sugarfoot Moffat of Michael Jackson's band on drums and Romeo Williams, journeyman R&B man on bass. But seriously, this album has more hooks than fucking Pinhead's Lair and Hellraiser. And I just don't see its downside. Even Chris Thomas somehow managed to produce this thing without pissing on it ever. Number 10, we have The Diving Board. In 2013, after the Union, Elton tapped T-Bone Burnett again and wanted to go even further back into his influence catalog. Now, this one evokes memories mostly of his first American album, Elton John, with a little bit of Madman Across the Water thrown in. It's somber, it's got a very warm mix, it's got some tape hiss to keep you from getting too 21st century about it, and it's masterful. But here's the rub. At this point, Elton John's voice is so old and so fucked up from touring basically nonstop for the last 20 years that it colors the songs in such a way that it makes it easy to miss how in line with his old stuff they are. The material is sparkling new, but in the style of his original groundbreaking albums. But the old man voice, the old man voice invites you to forget how good these songs are. Get The Diving Board, listen to the song Mexican Vacation, and imagine him singing it in 1972. You'd put it on Honky Chateau in no time. But even with that, dragging it down a little bit, The Diving Board is a fucking triumph. And the song Voyeur would have stood out on any of his great albums, old man voice or not. Number 9, Songs from the West Coast. After hearing Ryan Adams' 2000 album Heartbreaker, Elton decided to go back to his roots and make an organic album with a real producer, Patrick Leonard, and no more Chris Thomas big picture bullshit. And it worked triumphantly. They're perfect pop songs. There's hooks all over the album. Davey Johnstone plays all over it. Nigel Olsen even plays on some of it. It caps off with This Train Don't Stop There Anymore, which, had that been Elton John's last album ever, would have been the perfect coda to the end of his career. Thank God it wasn't, but thank God for Songs from the West Coast, because it was a rebirth of the original way he did records, and it led to Peachtree Road, Captain and the Kid, The Union, and The Diving Board, and hopefully this wonderful Crazy Night shit that's coming out in February. Number 8 is Blue Moves from 1976, the follow-up to Rock of the Westies. Blue Moves is a fucking weird album, and it's also a fucking great album. It's also a bona fide double album. It's got almost no filler. I mean, there are a couple of bullshit instrumentals in there, but aside from that, it's a buffet of Elton John material, some of which you would expect, some of which is him going way off the map, and a few of them that are what the fuck. It's almost like an upside-down Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. The lyrics are depressing. Bernie Taupin was coming off of a divorce, I believe, so there's a lot of introspection. There's a song about suicide called Someone's Final Song. Then you got Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word, and you've got Tonight, which is a lament of a breaking down marriage, and even more suicide references in Cage the Songbird. But like Yellow Brick Road, it starts with an extended instrumental finally leading into Tonight, and then the powerful up-tempo One Horse Town, which is severely underrated. Blue Moves is a challenge, and it doesn't meet you halfway either, but it's worth accepting the challenge, meeting it, and revisiting it. Number 7 is Don't Shoot Me from 1972. Now, when you have an album that starts off with Daniel and ends with High Flying Bird, does it fucking matter what's in between? No. But of course, Don't Shoot Me is chock full of great shit in between. It's generally an upbeat album. It's kind of a breathy summer rock feel with Elderberry Wine, Teacher I Need You, which incidentally Ben Folds blatantly ripped off, by the way, to Crocodile Rock, which is nothing but fun. I mean, not my particular kind of fun on that song, but definitely a showstopper, a crowd pleaser, and all the rest. Then you got Have Mercy on the Criminal, which throws in dramatic string arrangements and an epic worthy of the Elton John album, and somehow, surrounded by all this perfect pop, it doesn't stick out like a sore thumb. It totally works. Elton, Gus, the band, they were in the midst of their 5-year period of just being on fucking fire, and this album is smack in the middle of it. And let's not forget Blues for Baby and Me, a wondrous ballad that is known to all hardcore EJ fans, but forgotten by too many others. Number 6, Elton John, the American debut from 1970. Lush string arrangements by Paul Buckmaster on 60 Years On, I Need You to Turn To, and The King Must Die, among others, with the rocking Take Me to the Pilot and The Cage. But it was in fact the pop love song Your Song that was the only single from this album, and we all know how big that song was, and it's still very much around. But the album is actually part of a 3-part musical trinity of sorts that made Elton John. The first was Your Song. The second was this odd and unusual and great album that it came from. And thirdly, the most important, was him burning down the Troubadour in L.A. with Nigel Olsen and Dee Murray, storming into this country with legendary shows and the infamous Robert Hilburn L.A. Times review that started off simply with the word rejoice and only got more glowing from there. Elton John's star was born, and the album is number 6 on this list. P.S. The song The Greatest Discovery about the birth of Bernie Taupin's brother is still one of his most heartwarming lyrics. At number 5, we have Honky Chateau, and this was the first album that really focused on Elton and his stage band of Dee, Nigel, and Davey. And as I've made more than abundantly clear throughout these reviews, I tend to favor albums with those cats. In 1972, it was recorded and stripped down of the string affairs that were Madman Across the Water and the Elton John album. And it's one of Elton John's more rock-oriented albums. It's also got a southern tinge with songs like Mellow and Slave. And of course, one of my all-time faves, Rocket Man, is born from this record. Not to mention Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters. But what occurs to me always about how great this album is the fact that the song I Think I'm Gonna Kill Myself is on it. A tongue-in-cheek song about a teenage kid with angst who wants to commit suicide for attention. The song has a piano solo that is accompanied by a guy fucking tap dancing. This is on the same album as Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatter's, and yet it works. Nobody's complaining. Elton and Bernie's ability to go anywhere on the musical and lyrical map they wanted to and not completely derail the album is a rare talent. Lennon and McCartney could do it, obviously, but it's a short list of people who can make that happen. So Honky Chateau tap dances its way to number 5. That brings us to number 4, Madman Across the Water. 1971's Madman Across the Water swimming in at number 4 at this point in the reviews. What needs to be said? Tiny Dancer, Levon, Madman Across the Water. The album is fucking perfect. It's darker than its predecessor, Tumbleweed, and it's weirder than the Elton John album from 1970. And yet, it starts you off with Tiny Dancer. It eases you in. It gives you the barroom sing-along that is Holiday Inn. It pulls, as so often Elton John does, from the Southern sound, with Rotten Peaches, Razorface, and All the Nasties. And in my humble opinion, as once again a very below average piano player, it features Elton's best piano playing across the board, as does any album. Song after song on Madman Across the Water, the dynamics of the piano playing and Gus Dudgeon's recording of it show why the piano is one of the most versatile instruments ever made. It is. Shut up. It is. And Madman is number 4. Number 3. Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. The autobiographical album that runs 10 songs in sequence, detailing the first couple of years that Elton and Bernie were trying to make it as an act, writing songs for other people, playing small gigs, and all the salad days in between. It can be easily argued that it's Elton's best album. Easily. All of the top 3 can. It opens with the countryish title track, and it ends with a chorus of singers and a Nigel Olsen drum trip to heaven to end the world. And it has one of Elton John's best all-out rock songs, Gotta Get a Meal Ticket. And the one single from the album, the perfect Someone Save My Life Tonight, is one of the highlights of his career, and fuck, it delivers. There's not a bad song on this album. There's not even a mediocre song on this album. And Bernie Taupin wrote the lyrics in sequence, and as an interesting side note, Elton John wrote the music on a piano in the cocktail room of a cruise ship during off hours. True story. Kick-ass album. Captain Fantastic at number 3. We're down to 2. We're down to 2 to duke it out. Number 2, Tumbleweed Connection. Elton John's second album released in America is all about America, written by 2 guys that hadn't even ever been there when they wrote it. Masterpiece. Could easily be number 1, I would not argue. The album contains some songs that were initially actually written for the Elton John album. For example, Ballad of a Well-Known Gun was written long before Your Song. But when putting together these 2 albums, it was decided to keep the Western sepia tone showdowns on Tumbleweed and save the more dramatic pieces for the Elton John album. Dee Murray and Nigel Olsen are on some of the songs on Tumbleweed, but in these early days, session musicians were still being dispatched by the dozens by the record companies. No singles on this album. But back in those days, it was actually legal for a DJ to play deep cuts, so a lot of these songs got a lot of airplay, like Burn Down the Mission and The Amazing Emerina. There's one song on this album, actually, as a side note, that is actually a cover. The song Love Song is written by Leslie Duncan. So there you go. That leads us to number 1, and now you know what it is. It's fucking Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, my friends. Yes, I know, it's everybody's number 1. But listen, there's a reason, and believe me, I thought a lot about this. Here's why I have to put Yellow Brick Road as the best. First of all, it's a double album with only one bad song on it, Jamaica Jerk Off. And even that song has some oddly appealing humor when it's heard in the context of the whole album straight through. Now, as serious rock albums go, Captain Fantastic and Tumbleweed are probably better. But the deciding factor on Yellow Brick Road is its versatility, because the album showcases about 12 different types of music and lyrics, and it never seems inconsistent or contrived. Just to jog your memory, Love Lies Bleeding, Candle in the Wind, Benny and the Jets. A lot of artists would have killed to have those, just those songs on an album. And that's fucking side one. Gray Seal, Saturday, All the Girls Love Alice, This Song Has No Title, I've seen that movie too, and on, it continues to deliver. And ends with one of Elton John's most endearing songs of all time, Harmony. It really is a trip down a yellow brick road. I know it's a cliche, but the lyrics are like movies in your head, the melodies are fucking timeless, and there's a hook at every turn. The performance, the production, sparkle. If I ever had to defend why Elton John is an important musician, Tumbleweed and Captain Fantastic would probably get the job done, but Yellow Brick Road would seal the deal. As a matter of fact, I'd probably just rest my case after Love Lies Bleeding and still feel pretty good about my chances. And so, I rest my case now. There they are, 31 Elton John studio albums, from the dregs of leather jackets to the heights of Yellow Brick Road. I am so pleased that you listened to my first podcast of Pop Talk and Aliens. I assure you there will be guests in future episodes, and we will talk about whatever shit comes to mind, and it will be fantastic. So please subscribe, put us in your podcast list. We're also available on YouTube, and I hope you will join us again. So now, we say goodbye. Cue up the hot chip.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.